I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is the Ultimate Sports Podcast.
And I'm Russell Hargreaves, and here's what's coming up this week.
Andy Murray's reached yet another Grand Slam semi-final, but can he go all the way at the US Open?
England kick off their bid to qualify for the 2014 World Cup this coming Friday night. We'll hear from Jermaine Defoe as well as Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain.
England's cricketers failed to close out the one-day series against South Africa. We examine their progress under skipper Alistair Cook.
And we also look ahead to this weekend's Italian Grand Prix.
Well, we'll start with tennis and Andy Murray through to the last four of the US Open after an extraordinary comeback win against the Croatian Marin Cilic. He was a set and 5-1 down, but he managed to come back to win in four sets. We'll hear from the man himself now.
If you're very angry at setting 5-1 down, you're probably not going to be able to think of a way to get yourself back into the match. He got nervous towards the end of that set once I got one of the breaks back, which helped me. 5-all in the second set. I played a great match after that.
There's a danger, isn't there, that we become a little bit complacent about Murray because he's reached so many Grand Slam semis now. And I think it was his eighth straight quarterfinal, which is an amazing achievement. We almost expect him to get to this stage now, don't we?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The reaction in Croatia when Cilic got through was massive and they were so excited he'd got this far. And I think you're right, it does go to show the kind of the slight contrast and the slight blasé attitude we now have to Murray getting this far. And of course, Kevin, the question is always now, can he really transfer that into that first Grand Slam victory? And I don't know, I've just got a feeling that this could be the time. I think his form is very, very strong. And even when he does have a dodgy patch, as he clearly did in the first set and a half in this particular match, he fought back, stuck with it and really came good at the end and was playing some excellent tennis, as he just mentioned, in the last two and a half sets. And you look at his general form throughout the tournament so far, particularly his victory against Milos Raonic in the fourth round, which was a stupendous performance on pretty much every level. I just feel he's in with a very, very good chance. With Federer going out, I think playing Thomas Berdych in the next round, it'll be tough, but it's probably a matchup that Murray would have preferred if he'd got his ideal situation out of the two. Obviously no Rafael Nadal in this year's tournament. Looking forward to seeing how he matches up and if he can get the job done, and just got a feeling he might do it this time.
Yeah, the Berdych situation's interesting because in the couple of months leading up to this tournament, he'd been horrible. His form had been dreadful. And suddenly, he's come up with a run of good performances. He's beaten Federer in four sets, so he'll be flying in terms of confidence. This is a tricky one because Murray goes into a semi-final as favourite, and that's not normally the case.
It's going to be interesting, isn't it, to see how Murray handles that and just how he handles his all-round game as well. There have been patches where he's kind of lost the plot and looked distracted and frustrated, and those occasional signs of sort of, you know, self-anger and I don't know how quite you'd call it, self-loathing almost,
yeah,
out on the court did sort of rear their ugly head at moments during that quarterfinal victory. I still think having Ivan Lendl in his corner and watching on is very good. I think that just gives Murray that extra edge to really try and stay on top of the mental side of things. I think physically he's kicked on very well indeed, bar perhaps a couple of minutes in one of his earlier rounds. That aside, I think that's looking pretty positive too. And also, Kevin, clearly winning the Olympic gold medal is going to have given him massive, massive amounts of confidence. I think it's something really to put into his locker that he can look at and say, hang on, I do truly belong here with the world's top three players,
yeah,
one of which we've mentioned is absent, one of which is out. Yeah, go on, Muzza, go on, get the job done this time.
And I think spot on about mentioning Lendl as well, because I think Lendl's given him more mental control. There's a lot less chuntering towards his corner now.
There's still some. There's got to
there's
be
a little bit, but not as much. And I think he has more control. And it was interesting in the clip that we heard just now. He said, if you get angry at a set and 5-1 down, you can't find a way back into the match. So he's learning to control his emotions. Well, England's footballers kick off their bid to qualify for the 2014 World Cup on Friday night. Jermaine Defoe could well feature in the starting lineup, and he said the trip. And he says the trip to Moldova will not be an easy one.
At this level, every game's difficult. I can imagine when we go there, they'll make it hard for us. Maybe, you know, they'll sit behind the ball and try and frustrate us. Over the years, I've played in games where you go to smaller countries and you know, it's difficult to get the first goal.
That's the Tottenham striker Jermaine Defoe. Interesting trip this one, Kevin, isn't it? So obviously look at the Roy Hodgson's kind of, you know, new dawn. It really is perhaps the first time he's had the chance to properly stamp his authority on an England squad. He inherited the one pre the European Championships very, very late. Contrasting opinions on whether or not he did a good job. I personally think probably, admittedly the football wasn't great at times, but we got as far as England as we possibly could have ever conceived to have done. I think personally for Hodgson, the test really starts now to see if he can evolve that squad, evolve the playing style and bring through that next generation.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think he did what he could at the Euros, and I think, you know, they were a couple of penalty kicks away from getting through to the semi-finals. We shouldn't forget that.
Wasn't always pretty, but...
No, it wasn't, but it was effective. And, you know, he made them very organised. He did what we expected him to do, which was make them very organised. They were playing like a Hodgson team very early in the piece, and I think he's laid a foundation now from which they can go on, and that will probably be on show in Chisinau, because I think this is a difficult game for England, because Moldova have some good players. We shouldn't forget that. Sheriff Tiraspol, who are their champions, produced a pretty decent performance in the Europa League recently over two legs against Marseille. So, you know, they're not mugs, they're not inexperienced players. So this is a tough test for England. What will be interesting is whether they can bring the youngsters through. One of those, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, looked pretty good at the Euros, some decent performances. Question is, can he now cement a place in the starting 11? This is what he had to say about that.
You can never rest on your laurels, as they say. You know, I've got to keep working hard at Arsenal. Seeing what I did at the Euros and being involved in that kind of experience, you know, it inspires me to want to make sure I keep getting in squads and make it to as many tournaments as I can. So I'm going to keep working hard and try and make that happen.
That is Arsenal's Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, one of several young players that Kevin mentioned who'll be keen to really stamp their authority and put their hand up for ongoing selection under Roy Hodgson, who, to be fair, is a manager who does give youth its chance, but always tempered alongside a nucleus and a backbone of some more experienced players, and I'm sure plenty of those will have a key role to play in this qualifying campaign as well. So Moldova this coming Friday, and then a home tie against Ukraine the Tuesday after, Kevin.
Yeah, and you know, he will want 6 points, obviously. Moldova is a game he would expect to win. I suspect it will be a narrow win. And the Ukraine are a strong team, as we saw at the Euros, capable of really good performances. England will be favourites for both games. And as we say, it will be interesting to see how many youngsters he's willing to give a chance to and try and bring through. Of course, some of the changes in force. Leighton Baines, not a youngster, but hasn't played a competitive game for England at left back because Ashley Cole's been so dominant.
Cole out injured.
Really good player, Baines. Now we'll find out if he can step up. We'll move from England's footballers to England's cricketers. They failed to close out the one-day series against South Africa, which ended in a 2-2 draw after England were beaten by 7 wickets against South Africa at Trent Bridge. Another stunning performance from Hashim Amla.
He's not bad, is he?
No, he's a decent player, that Amla. 97 not out. Overall, how did you feel they fared?
It was okay, wasn't it? It was just a little bit disappointing on the back of the Test Series defeat. I think people thought that maybe the one-day outfit could actually win the series. At least they drew it, so they just about maintained by hook or by crook their number one status in that particular format of the game, so haven't lost that to the South Africans as well. Some solid performances, others probably underachieved a bit, and a couple of injury concerns as well. For me, one worry is Graham Swan, who clearly is hampered and has been for several months now. And in terms of Alistair Cook's captaincy, I don't think he could have done an awful lot more. A couple of decent knocks. At times he does get dismissed early. I guess that's par for the course for an opening batsman. So for me, I think England are probably, I don't know, 75% there in the one-day format in terms of who they want to pick and what game plan they want. What'll be interesting, Kevin, for me as well, is to see how this team fares then in the T20 series that starts on Saturday at Chesterfield Street. Plenty of changes for the squad again for that one. 4 or 5 players from the one-day team that don't feature. A lot of young guns coming back in for this T20 series. Hopefully they'll show no fear and get stuck in and smash the ball around. And I think there's a decent chance that they could, having lost one series, drawn the other, potentially at least escape with a T20 series win.
What's interesting is we said earlier on in this podcast about we got complacent, or some people get complacent about Andy Murray going deep into Grand Slams time and time again. In a way, that's kind of happening with the cricket as well, because since Alistair Cook's taken over, the one-day team's done exceptionally well. They've probably been the form unit in one-day cricket in the world over the past maybe 18 months.
Hence, they've got the status they have.
Exactly, yeah. And that's unusual for an England one-day side. So you kind of think it's good that they've got to that level, that we're disappointed that they've drawn with a strong team like South Africa.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very fair point indeed. And it's always a case, isn't it, of looking out for the next generation and making sure that those who are incumbents in the side keep their hunger and keep their sort of form as best they possibly can. And we've seen, haven't we, in the Test arena, a couple of players go by the wayside and others come in for whatever reason. Some stick their hands up, people like Johnny Bairstow, others like young James Taylor, hopefully getting another opportunity. And other players who've been there or thereabouts for a while, players like Steve Finn, good to see him getting an opportunity. And you never know, do you? People like Chris Wokes, who featured in that final match of the series. Hopefully he, much vaunted for a while now, can get the opportunity to step up and get the job done. So it's been an intriguing dynamic, the England cricket scene across the summer so far. It's not quite over yet. We look forward to those T20s, Kevin. And just finally, we should also, of course, talk Formula One, which was back last weekend after the summer break. Dramatic events at Spa-Francorchamps. What a victory for Jenson Button. A brilliant start to finish drive to claim the chequered flag and never be headed. But for me, the big crash at the first corner, of course, caused by Romain Grosjean, Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso very much on the receiving end. But in terms of Hamilton, I am concerned about what's happening. Of course, newspaper reports about a potential move to Mercedes come the off-season, even though he's got a year left on his contract. Bizarre tweets, particularly the one where he sent the team's diagnostics out from qualifying.
Yeah, that was very strange. Strange, wasn't it? That was a real... Oof. That was very naive for somebody of his experience.
I'm not quite sure where he's going at the moment in terms of his McLaren career. I think, you know, now that Ron Dennis isn't the main man there, who was his mentor coming through, I don't think he shares the same relationship with Martin Whitmarsh. Looking forward to seeing what happens. And also the Italian Grand Prix, another classic on the calendar, just like Spa, steeped in tradition at Monza. And six drivers still technically in with a chance of winning the World Championship. I think despite Jensen's win, Lewis's lack of form, I fear the McLarens might now be too far off. So can either Raikkonen potentially or Webber get back into the mix as well? But it's probably looking like a Fernando Alonso, Sebastian Vettel head-to-head battle, unless one of those others can put together a very dramatic run of form. And of course, the Tifosi will be out in force to watch Alonso in the prancing horse. And what I think quickly about Alonso, Kevin, is this year's Ferrari is not a great car at all. It really isn't. But he's just such a good all-round driver and so good at extracting every inch, every sinew out of that car that he's kept himself in the championship lead, which is a phenomenal achievement.
Just one final point before we wrap up on Lewis Hamilton. Obviously, these suggestions from Eddie Jordan earlier in the week that he was going to join Mercedes, that he was in talks with them, that's been denied both by Hamilton's people and by McLaren. But you alluded to it earlier on, that the relationship with Martin Whitmarsh is nowhere near the same as it was with Ron Dennis. He's been there since he was very young, Lewis Hamilton. Are we now at the point where that relationship is almost irreparable and he's been there too long and he needs a change?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? And you just look at the dynamic within McLaren, and at the moment you could say that actually Jenson Button has been the first teammate that he's really potentially got on very well with, certainly the first challenging teammate to him that he's had that with. He got on fairly well with Heikki Kovalainen, but to be fair, that was never really a level playing field in terms of ability or dominance within the team. But with Jenson, you know, pretty much team equals, the first ever driver to have beaten him in a straight fight over a season last year. Hamilton, for much of this campaign, has responded strongly and been the dominant driver this time around. So in some ways, things were looking relatively positive, but just over the last sort of few weeks and months, yes, the stories have come out about apparently Hamilton's team hawking his availability to Red Bull and to Ferrari, neither of which has come to fruition. So with Mercedes, potentially deals worth as much as £60 million, we understand.
A lot of money.
McLaren next season, quickly, Kev, will have to pay for their Mercedes engines, which means their clout in terms of paying their drivers is going to lessen, whereas Mercedes will have extra cash to put in. Michael Schumacher, we believe, from what Bernie Ecclestone accidentally alluded to the other day, is going to retire again. The likes of De Resta and Hulkenberg and some of the youngsters had been vaunted to get that second Mercedes seat. But I think alongside Nico Rosberg, Hamilton could be an intriguing fit. And then for McLaren, where do they go? Do they bring in someone like De Restra or Hulkenberg, or perhaps Kimi Räikkönen was being mooted for a return to McLaren 7 or 8 years on? So it's going to be an interesting off-season. But before that, Kev, 7 races to go. Interesting fight for the championship. We look forward to it.
Thanks, Russell. Excellent insight as always. That's it for this week. Enjoy your sporting weekend.